Kirby Monsters is a podcast about facing the unknown.
I start to float away from the earth.
Have you ever smoked crack before?
We're all kind of frantically searching for meaning.
They have the neurotransmitters.
I think we're all juggalos in some way.
Yo, we're not broken.
Crazed delinquents.
We're in our last days, young man.
Listen to Here Be Monsters,
the podcast about the unknown,
on the KCRW iTunes page.
From the independent producer project of KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Bob Carlson, and this is Unfictional. Unfictional is a program of true stories and personal documentaries, and on this episode, The Hoax Artist, two stories of deception. For example, later in the show, it's a story of the kind of swindle you pull for money and prizes. Pretty straightforward, unless you're an amateur.
And he said that he won too many times this mobile phone competition. He was banned. And so he asked me if he can play with my little brother's mobile phone number. And I asked him, well, why not play with mine? And he said, oh, I already played with yours. You won last week and your parents won the 2 weeks before. I'm out of friends with mobile phones, so I'm reaching out to your little brother.
But in this first segment, the motive is not money. It's something else. Because for the man in this story, hoaxing isn't a way to make quick cash. It's an art form. And the world of daytime television is his canvas. It's a place where he can be a star of sorts. But later, when he tries to practice his art of deception in the real world, things are a lot different. From KCRW.com, it's Unfictional.
Kenneth?
Yes?
Oh.
Hello.
Hi, Kenneth. How old are you?
12.
Problems with your stepmom?
Yes. I'm taking a shower sometimes, and my stepmother comes in and she looks at me.
What do you mean?
She just looks, and then I tell her to stop, and she runs away.
She runs away?
Yeah, she, like, runs back to her room.
This is strange, huh?
Yeah.
She didn't exist. No one existed in the whole story.
From a very young age, she had already figured it out that this is possible.
I wouldn't really call what I do as a hoax artist. I would say that it's more storytelling. I was taking a shower as a 10-year-old, and my stepmother would walk into the shower, smirk at me, which was totally like a bizarre detail that I stuck to.
What kind of a facial expression does she have?
She kind of has a smirk.
The smirk?
Yeah.
It was amazing. I mean, I tried to wake up everyone in my house. It was really exciting. It was really exciting, actually.
She has a smirk, opens the shower, and runs back to her room. Okay, the most important thing you have to do is you have to sit down with your dad and get him alone outside the house.
Okay.
And don't say, hey, I have to talk to you.
As a 10-year-old, you kind of want to do stuff like that. And I guess that's carried over into parts of my life. You know, there's weirder ways to start a career.
My name is Graham Raymond. I'm a reporter with the New York Daily News. I wrote a story about Ken Tarr 3 years ago for the Village Voice. He's this tall, gangly guy, kind of geeky, talks a lot, talks a tremendous amount.
Hello, my name is Kenny Tarr. I'm a filmmaker, or I'm an aspiring filmmaker. Not having a lot of resources available to me, I've made a lot of television shows and short films using a lot of the major media outlets in our country and world.
Can you show me your ID? I need to make sure that you are who you say you are.
That'd be really funny. Yeah, I just got a passport here.
He called me at The Voice and he said, I've been making up fake stories to get on reality TV shows. And I said, oh, really? Can you prove it?
Thanks for coming in and thanks for watching. Our guests today are hearing wedding bells. But before anyone says, I do, their mates want to hear the truth.
He sent me video grabs that he had made of various shows that he had been on.
Please welcome Ken to the show. Ken, how you doing? Doing
great. On the Bill Cunningham show, he was a Magyar gypsy leader.
I'm part of the gypsy caravan. That is my culture. I'm from Egypt.
Who had an edict that he could cheat on his girlfriend, but she could not cheat on him.
You can do whatever you want. You just gotta be the rep two people.
What culture is this? I might want to join this culture.
In Unfaithful, he was an international security expert who was cheating on his girlfriend, who was also cheating on him. on Trisha Goddard's show. He played Eddie the Trucker.
Well, I'm $70,000 in debt, and I'm seeing a lot of different women on the side. A lot. I mean,
when you're trucking?
Yeah. When I'm...
Where do you see these women? Do you have sex in your truck?
I've had sex in my truck before, yes.
You've had sex?
A scary clown on Judge Joe Brown.
This is what I do. This is a gypsy clown. This is my act.
The clown outfit consisted of a knit hat and a painted mask.
And on the sit down, a show when the host is actual gangster Michael Francesi, who mediates disputes over dinner. He played a guy whose best friend had seduced his girlfriend and crashed his car. Those were some of them.
I grew up in Inland Empire, California, watched a lot of television, started performing in not necessarily plays because everyone would always say, he's just got a little bit too much energy for what we're trying to do. So, I started coming up with my own stories. Why? Because I usually just sit on my couch like anyone else, and I felt like I belonged. I couldn't just drop out of high school and move to Hollywood, so I picked up the phone again, and I picked up the phone to a major television show at the time.
Putting their friendships to the test.
I came up with a story to go on the Ricky Lake show where I called them and said that I wanted to have sex with my best friend's fiance before they became too serious.
Sure, we all have asked that in the past, right? Oh, Kenny.
I basically wanted to play off their whole, like, partying image that's on the show, like kind of this freewheeling, offering people to have menage a trois.
The reason I'm here today, I got my friend Andrew, and we're all in the same group of friends, Andrew and Sarah and I. Basically, it breaks down. I just want to have sex with Sarah before things get too serious. That's all I want to do.
Still, to this day, I don't know why people, regular, real people, put themselves in these situations.
How could you seriously ask me you want to spend that with my girlfriend, dude? What the? I can't
Andrew,
believe you
please just watch your mouth if you
Sorry.
Could. I can understand. You're confused.
He wants to sleep with my girlfriend?
You don't need to get that upset about, man. I just want one night, man.
Dude, can't you get your own, Kenny?
Yeah, but...
If you really think about it, there's a lot here that is startling. It started with Phil Donahue.
We hope you'll join us.
In 1970, Phil Donahue came on and basically invented the reality talk show. Guests would talk about their problems, and the earnest former newsman would try to fix them.
This is not to be theatrical about this. These are very serious adult people who care not only about their own well-being and the well-beings of their ex-spouses, and they are also happy to share with you what they think might be important information for anybody who finds himself in this situation.
That G-rated formula evolved into something much more salacious and much more confrontational.
Take it easy, whoa!
A never-ending descent into the lowest common denominator. People weren't really interested in someone's problems being solved. They were interested in hearing how messed up other people's lives were so they could feel like their lives weren't quite as messed up as they were. They didn't have to pay actors. They didn't have to pay script writers. Obviously, it was a gold mine for television executives.
The next show I did was the Judge Alex show.
Judge Alex is back with a case of Kenyon Tarr, who's suing his former friend, Sean Nicholson, for $1,137 for an unpaid plumbing bill after a night of being locked in Sean's mortuary. But Sean claims Kenyon was only an acquaintance and not a close friend, and is charging him for hours he didn't work.
God love Judge Alex, you know. Salt of the earth type guy, you know.
It's just you at night in a mortuary with all the dead bodies.
Yeah, two that I know of. There's things, you know, they're storage tanks. I'm not prying around. I'm not trying to walk around and find out any more information than where I can sit and be comfortable and not look at, like, a body rising out. You start seeing things in the middle of the dark.
I think there's a lot of art to dumb. The audience, you know, a bunch of Russian immigrants or whoever they are just laughing at me, you know. Humor is humor, you know, and I was saying funny things, and it was great to see, you know, this character just take on a huge life.
So now you're in pitch black in a room with dead bodies.
Yeah, exactly.
Locked in.
Yeah.
All night.
And here we are, and I'm still wondering where the money is for this whole experience.
These shows, the judge resolves the dispute, and then the shows pay the winner. So the loser does not pay the winner. The show pays the winner. Neither party is actually out of pocket. obviously that creates a great opportunity for collusion. Kenny took advantage of that. He found a friend to appear on these shows with him, and then they would split the proceeds afterwards.
A man deserves a Purple Heart if they give those to plumbers for spending the night among the living dead at your mortuary.
And it wasn't necessary. The door could open. I don't know.
Seems like everything he listed on here seems like it should be a lot more than the $1,137 that he is suing for. So judgment for the plaintiff in the amount of $1,137. And maybe now the two of you can actually become real friends.
From Judge Alex, I just decided to hit every one of these shows.
He would pitch and pitch and pitch. One thing about Kenny is that he doesn't take no for an answer. You know, he doesn't give up.
It was just really, really detailed performance art. You got an aggressive New York producer trying to sweat you for every detail.
Hi, my name is Kenny Tarr. I stole my brother's fiance just 3 weeks before their wedding.
While you're making up the story that you're a gypsy clown or whatever, they're not going to ask you that, but they're going to ask you everything else about your life. And they're going to ask if they can speak to your father, your mother. I'm adopted.
I'm a foster child.
I've never spoken to any of them.
I ran away when I was 5 and I joined a gang.
I'm a lone badger and I was raised by Mustafa the Pimp.
If these shows put any resources into verifying stories beyond asking questions of the person and getting their picture, then he would be nowhere.
If there was a more creative world, there would just be, you know, Kenny Tarr's show on at 1:30 p.m. every day on Channel 13, but it's not.
He had been on 8 shows taped in 5 different cities over the period of about a year and a half.
I was getting really hot in 2012 with this.
He developed relationships with producers on some of the shows. One of the producers told Tarr, we have to feed the beast. And so eventually, they started calling him. Do you have something on sexual abuse for us? Do you have something on a past relationship you had?
I just totally wish there was more shows. You know, I ran out of shows. I called Canadian shows, I called South African shows, I was pretending I was Muhammad Ali's illegitimate son.
He wants to be famous. He wanted to be an actor, and that didn't work out. So this is sort of his fallback.
You piece together what you can, you know? Sometimes I'm thinking about what I did and what I want to do, and it's like I wish I would have just made a bunch of short films. But it's just too slow for me. I wanted to see myself on TV quicker than that stuff would put me.
Did you feel satisfied after doing all these?
No. I don't really ever feel... I didn't feel satisfied. You know, it never satisfied me.
Let's begin, though, this half hour with a story out of Los Angeles. And Willie has the details on this. Willie, good morning.
Morning, guys. Yeah, this is an odd one. Authorities have arrested a Los Angeles man who allegedly pranked coaches from the NBA, NFL, and the college ranks into believing they were scouted and at times being offered top jobs.
The LAPD confirms to ABC News that Kenneth Edward Tarr is believed to have pranked at least a dozen coaches from the NFL, NBA, and college football teams into believing that he was offering them jobs.
Tarr reportedly emailed a writer for the sports website Deadspin with the subject line, "Hi, I hoaxed Tony Dungy," and boasted that he made dozens of similar calls.
My name is Dom Cosentino. I cover the New York Jets for the Star Ledger and NJ.com, but previously I worked as a staff writer at Deadspin. Okay, this is an email we received. Subject just said, "Hi, I hoaxed Tony Dungy. It's a matter of time until I make headline news again with my sports hoaxes. Call me," with his phone number redacted. Here's a video of me offering Mark Jackson the Lakers job.
Yes, how you doing? This is Mark Jackson calling.
So I work with the Los Angeles Lakers. I understand, of course, you're still under contact with the Golden State Warriors, but
I like sports a lot, and I would see the NFL Network and all these people working and giving stories and putting stories, insider stories out there. And I wanted to really make a distinction about what an insider is. And I started to talk to everyone in the sports world.
You know, walking through the front door kind of by calling directly to the offices of these NFL organizations and colleges and offering jobs to people.
There may be a change in this season in the head coaching direction, and I just wanted to see if beyond this season, if you'd be interested perhaps in the Lakers position if it were to open up.
What's your question? What do you do, sir? What's your name again?
Ken Edwards.
You know, you're looking at a guy, you know, sitting in his apartment, you know, making these calls. He looks like he hasn't left the house for a few days kind of thing. You know, it was very bizarre. Being able to sound like he was authoritative enough, he was able to sell a few of these guys on the idea that that's what he's doing, even though the whole thing was a prank and a hoax.
And what kind of position are you talking about?
Mr. Doss is going to be resigning, and the potential is maybe, for you to leave the program.
You know, he might be putting somebody's job at risk in a way. They may not necessarily want their employers to know they're looking at other jobs. It's just like any other situation.
I don't want to create a stir or anything. I'm just basically trying to gauge whether or not you had a passion for Longhorn football at all.
Sure. I think it's a great program. So, absolutely.
Excellent. Great. Well,
I called, you know, there's Chip Kelly, different people that work for the Dodgers, the Jerry Jones owns the Cowboys, anyone in the sports world. I would do all sorts of impersonations and things like that, at times being myself and at times being other people. Just trying to get people's feelers out there, and I got stories. I got things that people would love to get.
He got himself into trouble by videotaping some of these exchanges and recording them, which in California was against the law.
I mean, if they're so serious and thought that I was so serious, then, you know, get a brain.
Why do you think he videotaped them?
Just to prove it, you know, I think just to kind of show people that this is what he does and this is how he's able to do it. I think I brought up to him in one of our conversations that what he was doing was, you know, could be against the law, wiretap laws, and, you know, he didn't seem to care. He just figured that, you know, what he was doing was so brilliant that it didn't matter, and that people would recognize his brilliance. And his whole end game, just the attention from the whole thing, and kind of getting off, perhaps, from the attention.
It's just this great joy that I have when it's all working and it's all hitting on all cylinders. Whether I'm sitting in New York and they just flew me there, or whether I'm sitting on my couch in the middle of the Inland Empire, it's like all the same deal. It's basically what Quentin Tarantino or anyone else feels when their ideas are getting validated at that time.
He desperately wants to be famous in some way as a primary goal. That's what drives him. The other stuff is secondary to that. But the other stuff is actually more interesting. He's made a comment about how superficial and corrupt the mass media is.
You're sitting in a green room with other people, and they're in real life situation. A man that abandoned his 12 children, daughter that's never met her father.
From sort of the phony sympathy to the coaching of guests, once the show's over, they just kind of cut you loose. They just needed to feed the beast to keep the show rolling with amazing, bizarre, freaked out stories.
And here I am, hoaxing a television show, waiting to talk to the other end of my hoax.
He managed to actually make a relevant, serious point about American society.
Kenny Tarr was released on bail shortly after his arrest. According to his lawyer, all charges were eventually dropped. He says it's because many of the people Kenny called didn't want to testify. Kenny Tarr says he's working on a movie about the experience. That story was produced by Unfictional's Nick White. You're listening to Unfictional on KCRW.com. I'm Bob Carlson, and today on the program, The Hoax Artist. Well, he's been a hacker, a bank robber, a furniture designer, pilot, filmmaker, but mainly an internationally known neuroscientist. He's done everything else. You had to assume that Moran Cerf had done some hoaxing in his time. And in fact, he once got mixed up in a scheme to win cash and prizes by hoaxing a trivia contest. The plan involved a couple of different phone lines, some fake identities, and a mastermind named Throw Up. From KCRW.com, it's Unfictional.
Up until I was 20 years old, the biggest crime I was involved with was maybe stealing Disney cards as a kid or something like that. I was never really involved in anything that was suspicious. But when I was 30, I was actually involved in a massive ploy to scam the show Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? It was all instigated by a friend of mine, a friend that I had since I was a kid, whose real name was Zoic, but we used to call him Throw Up because one time as a kid he told us a joke that he found really funny, mostly he, because no one else laughed, and he laughed so hard that he eventually ended up throwing up on himself. So my friend Throw Up was one of the smartest kids that I knew, but he also had an aptitude for gambling. You know, as kids, you sometimes say, I dare you to, I don't know, walk with your eyes closed and I'll give you $1 if you do that. We used to do that as kids, and he always took any bet out there. Once he licked a worm that he picked from the floor for $1. And I think that we knew that something was a little bit troubling when we got a little older and he started making money and mostly paying his university tuition by gambling. He didn't gamble on things like casino, he gambled on trivia shows. He was so knowledgeable when it comes to trivia, he just knew everything. In fact, he used to read the encyclopedia from Aardvark to Zebra and just memorize entries. We, in fact, as kids used to fine him $1 every time he introduced a fact that was irrelevant just because he knew it. So every time he said something just as a way to demonstrate he knows something, we would fine him $1. So he used to gamble on trivia thing. And the way it went in the beginning of the 2000 years, he kind of signed up to this mobile phone trivia game where you would send a text message to the headquarters and you would get a question to your phone. You just pick your answer and you win 1 point. And at the end of the month, the person who had the most points would win something. And he actually made so much money that he paid his tuition just by winning those bets. And he had 10 flat screen TVs, a vacation in the Bahamas, a cruise in the Bahamas, and eventually even won 2 cars just by winning those trivia competition. And while we were all impressed by his ability to win those things, we also knew that he spent a lot of hours on those trivia shows. One day he called me and said, Moran, I want to get the phone number of your little brother. My little brother was, I think, 16 at the time. I asked him, why is that? And he said that he apparently won too many times this online mobile phone competition. He was banned. The company said, just you cannot play anymore because you win all the time. And so he asked me if he can play with my little brother's mobile phone number. And I asked him, well, why not play with mine? And he said, oh, I already played with yours. You won last week and your parents won the 2 weeks before. I'm out of friends with mobile phones, so I'm reaching out to your little brother. And I think the moment we knew it was way too much was when I was 30 one day. I was sitting in the street with my girlfriend at the time, arguing about whether we should or should not stay together because she said that I was childish and all my friends are not really adults and mature, and maybe I should rethink who I want to spend my time with. And just when she says that, my phone rings, and I look at my phone and I see that the name on the ID is Throw Up. So I ignored it and I kept talking to my girlfriend. And suddenly her phone rings. She picks up the phone and she hands it to me and she says, it's for you. And he says, you've got to go home right now. We both have to be next to a landline within 15 minutes. I'll explain later. I get home, I pick up the phone and he says to me, here's what's going on. In the last couple of weeks, I've been playing a trivia game, a radio version of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. People basically play online trivia questions all week long. They get points. And the two people that get the highest score of the week phone to the radio show live and they play head-to-head where they get asked 3 questions. And whoever gets to 3 points first wins. And what he wins, I think, was a car. I think it was a pretty fancy car. So he calls me and he says, I need you to be the person on the radio because I already won last week's show and I can't win again. So what I did this week is I played under your name with your mobile phone number. And in 15 minutes, you're going to get a call from the producer of the show on the radio and you're going to be matched with someone else. You're going to have to answer correctly. And if you win, you get a call. All we're going to do is that I'm going to call you on the landline. So you're going to have 1 ear with me on the landline. On the other hand, you're going to have the producer from the radio show, and I'm going to listen to the show myself on the radio, and you just have to echo what I said on one side to the other side. That's all. So we're going to win the show by me listening to it and just telling you what to say on the other line. And before I know what's going on, the phone rings. It's the producer from this radio show, Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. It's actually Israeli version, so instead of $1 million, it was $10,000 or the car. Before long, it starts. So the guy asked me, well, Mohan, we saw that you played all week and you won an excessive amount of points this week. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself? Where do you live? And I'm silent because I'm so shocked. And then I hear from one ear, Tel Aviv. And I just echo Tel Aviv to the other side. And the guy says, and what do you do for a living? And then I hear on one side, neuroscientist. And I just echo it to the other side, neuroscientist. We're in a live show and I just get answers from one side to the other of what I have to say. Pretty easy. Okay, so the show begins and now it's me against a guy called Nathan. And the first question comes up. And the question is, which country won the World Cup in 1998? And before I know anything about that, I get whisper from one side, France. And I just echo France, and before long, it's 1-0 to us. And then the other question comes up. How many kilometers are there in a mile? And the other guy says 1.6, and now it's 1-1. And then the second question comes, and it's, which is the biggest country in Africa? And this one I even know myself, so I scream, Algeria, and I get totally into it. I'm kind of excited by what's going on, and now it's 2-1 to us. And then comes a question about something in nightlife, and because I had a girlfriend for so many years, I was totally out of the nightlife scene, so the guy picks the question, and now it's 2-2. And then the radio host says, well, it's tight, 2-2, and whoever answers this one wins the game. And here comes the last question, and it's a question in mathematics. And that's the field that I know a lot about, my friend Throop knows a lot about, so I'm sure we're gonna pick this up. This is really easy. And the question starts and it says, in topology, what is the name of a one-dimensional... And before the guy finishes the question, I already know the answer. It's a Mobius strip. So I scream into the phone, Mobius strip. And the guy says, no, Mohan, you didn't let me finish the question. The question was, what is the name of a one-dimensional knot that circles itself? And the answer I knew right away was a trefoil knot, but I was out. So the other guy is given as much time as he wanted to actually, I bet, just look online and figure out the question, because after a few seconds, he says the right answer and we lose. And I feel really sad. I was totally into it. I got excited and I kind of went over myself to answer too quickly, and I just lost my friend a car or his $10,000 prize. We hang up the phone on one side and I'm left with my friend throw up on the phone. Look, I'm really sorry. I wasn't ready for that. I didn't prepare. And he stops me and says, wait, don't worry about it. We won. And I said, what do you mean we won? We just lost. And he says, oh, I didn't tell you. The other guy was also me, Nathan. I played the two of you. On the other line, I had him and I just told him what to say too. So it turns out that my friend Throop was so much of a gambler that he didn't really want to gamble at all. He just made sure that he would win this thing. He ended up actually giving me and my girlfriend at the time the second award, which was, I think, a little vacation somewhere in the south of Israel in a hotel for the weekend. The producer of the Who Wants to Be Millionaire started noticing that a lot of people win from the same zip code in Tel Aviv, and they kind of figured out that maybe it's time to put an end to this, and instead of just creating a rule that stops him from playing, they just recruited him to be part of the guys who make the questions.
Moran Cerf is a professor of neuroscience and business and is a multiple-time Moth Grand Slam storytelling champion, as well as a regular contributor to this program. You can find links, information, and photos about this episode at our website, kcrw.com/unfictional. Take a listen to our entire archive of programs while you're there. I'm Bob Carlson, producer of Unfictional. The associate producer is Nick White. Please podcast the show on iTunes, follow the show on Twitter, @Unfictional, or like us on Facebook. Most importantly, I hope you'll join me next time for Unfictional from kcrw.com.